Chapter 15, About the Ring Which Is Seeking Its Owner. Batur's story had saddened Christian and Big Tiger. They had never heard of the Chachar Mongols who had been driven from their pastures by the Chinese and obliged to withdraw to the barren steppe right out on the edge of the desert. A few times Christian and Big Tiger had seen a Mongol in the streets of Peking, gaping with wonder at the unfamiliar treasures in the shop windows. He wore a rich, colorful robe and held a prayer chaplet in his hands, and when he swung along in his heavy riding boots, they had looked furtively after him, and the grown-ups had smiled and shrugged their shoulders, saying, "There goes a barbarian."
"You have made our hearts heavy," said Big Tiger. "Hamaga, don't worry," cried Batur. "We Chachar Mongols have little pasture now, but lots desert, and everywhere we merry as larks."
"But it's hot in the desert," said Christian, giving Big Tiger a friendly nudge.
"Big heat not there," declared Batur. "Now great cold in desert, and friendly sun weak. My father says we walk 2 moons to Etzingal, and only then will it be lovely and warm. But now good time for traveling. The moon of the hare is cold, the moon of the dragon is cool. Camels walk well then, and don't get tired."
Big Tiger gave Christian a return nudge, which meant, "Do you hear that?" Aloud he said, "We're going to the Etzingal, too, and we'll be there earlier if the spokes don't fall from the wheels."
"Nothing real fear," Batur asserted. "Today and tomorrow very lucky days for traveling. How many days travel you?"
"We'll be there in 5 or 6 days, good fortune says."
"This good fortune? Soldier with small gun?"
"Yes," said Christian. "He's a soldier of General Wu, and he's driving the horseless car, and he has a pistol in his belt."
"Good or bad man?" asked Batur.
"Half and half," said Big Tiger.
"And Greencoat traveling with you, too?"
"We don't know," Christian admitted. "Good fortune says he's coming part of way with us. He has not said when this part of way ends."
"Very important find out. Must begin at once."
Christian was astonished, and Big Tiger said, "It can't be helped. We wouldn't dare ask."
"To ask no good," declared Batur. "Better much learn without asking. People say truth easily in sleep."
Christian and Big Tiger looked at each other puzzled. They didn't know what Batur was getting at. But Batur sat there grinning and said, "When sun rises, know we already what we want to know." As he said this, things began to liven up in the courtyard. A man with a storm lantern went over to the camels. A few of them stood up, and when some of them didn't want to lie down again, he called "Zook, Zook" to them. Then they lay down, and he hung feeding bags around their necks.
"What's the man calling?" asked Christian.
"When says Zook, Zook many times, camels know must lie down," Batur explained.
"Do they get something to eat?"
"Yes, they get soft beans, because the prince of the Belens and the living Buddha want travel quickly. That very good if people have money for it. We Chachar Mongols no have silver for beans. Our camels eat what find, become cunning as foxes, and cost nothing. Now, I pray, graciously excuse, must go."
"May we go with you?" asked Big Tiger.
"Bolna," said Batur. "Great reverence show holy man Yolros Lama. Always wise do that."
Big Tiger looked at Christian, and Christian asked,
"What shall we say?"
"Say nothing, you. I very good words speak for all. You only kneel down very nice, like camel."
"Bolna," said Christian,
and Big Tiger said, "We will kowtow and wish 10,000 times luck."
Thereupon, Big Tiger and Christian pulled on their felt shoes, and Batur murmured approvingly,
"For work in hand, those kind shoes very splendid, much better than mine."
Then all three climbed down from the truck. Under it stood a pair of high black riding boots, curved upwards at the toes like little boats. The legs were decorated with brown and green leather. Batur slipped them on. "You and you," ordered Batur, "wait near Abbot's carriage. I speak 2 words with Camel Man, then I come too." A light glowed in one of the rooms under the projecting roof. The flickering reflection of a fire ran up and down the rice paper window pane. It was the kitchen. They could hear voices, but the voices were speaking Mongolian, and it was only when Hailstone said something in Chinese that the reply came in that language. Christian and Big Tiger stood still.
"Here's the tea for the excellencies," they heard Hailstone saying, "and here are the cups for our most honored guests."
"We do not need your cups," the answer came. "The abbot and the prince have their own silver bowls with them."
"Please forgive my forgetfulness. Of course princes must have silver or gold drinking vessels, but what about 1 or 2 leaves of saffron for long life?"
You may put them on a plate. Now open the door. Christian and Big Tiger felt that it was time for them to decamp. They hurried along under the roof, and after having passed two doors, they stumbled over the long shafts of a carriage which stretched into a roofed-over doorway.
"The carriage of the living Buddha," whispered Christian. "Let's climb into it," said Big Tiger resolutely. "There's nothing else to do."
He climbed in nimbly, and Christian followed him with a beating heart, for he feared the carriage would tip over at any moment.
"No fear," Big Tiger whispered. "I've looked, and there's a prop behind it."
The carriage was firmly and squarely built, and had two big, high wheels. Instead of the usual sides, it had a superstructure like a little house, open at the front. To the right and the left were miniature windows hung with dark curtains. Inside was a heap of cushions, on which Christian and Big Tiger sat down. They would have been very comfortable had they not felt sure that sooner or later someone would come and make a great row at finding them in the holy man's carriage, and they would not even be able to run away.
"There's no way of escape," said Big Tiger. "We're like crickets in a cage." "Hush," said Christian. "There's someone coming."
They heard the slouching sound of Mongolian riding boots, and suddenly they noticed with a shock that there was a door right opposite them. Scarcely 3 paces separated them from the bedroom of Yolros Lama and the prince. Before there was time to think, along came 2 men wearing long robes and fox fur hats. One was carrying a steaming kettle, and the other a tray with various little dishes. They walked straight into the room and shut the door. Christian and Big Tiger heard salutations. They also saw a light being lit, and when they were just wondering whether they should seek another hiding place, the 2 men came out again. They would have passed by if Hailstone had not come running up to ask them, "How do their excellencies feel? Have they slept well? And the tea, what do they say to my fine pico tips?" "They say nothing. The prince is only now getting up, and His Holiness has been saying his prayers for the last hour."
"Perhaps he will say a little prayer for me, too."
"He prays for the welfare of every living creature." "I think," said Hailstone, "that he might make some slight exceptions."
"There are no exceptions," said one of the men severely. "He wore the red robe of a lama."
A note says that a lama is a priest or monk in Tibet and Mongolia.
"I only meant," Hailstone excused himself, "that there are people, for instance..."
"Be silent," said the lama. He turned away and signed to his companion, and they both walked off towards the kitchen. Hailstone looked after them, and when their footsteps had died away, he shrugged his shoulders contemptuously and came up to the carriage. Obviously, he wanted to do something unlawful, for he looked around him furtively to make sure no one was looking. Then he took a step forward, then another, and as he was about to stretch his inquisitive head into the carriage, something round and black flew out in his face. Though it was soft and did not hurt, it gave him a terrible fright, and he fell down with a yell. At the same moment, there was a skirmishing sound, and 2 dark forms emerged from the carriage. In their desperate hurry, Christian and Big Tiger took no notice of the prostrate form which lay between the shafts. One of them stepped on Hailstone's chest, the other on his face, and Hailstone thought he was done for. He shut his eyes and remained lying there. At Hailstone's yell, the door opposite opened, and the young Mongolian prince emerged. People came running from the kitchen, too, asking, "What's wrong?" But as it was still pitch dark, no one noticed Hailstone, who was lying half under the carriage. "We don't know what happened," said the people from the kitchen. "We see nobody about," said the prince. "But someone yelled," said the stern lama. Camel Man now came along with his lantern, followed by Batur. "The man who yelled is lying here," cried Batur. "It's Hailstone," said the Camel Man, swinging his lantern. "Come here, men." "Stand up," the prince ordered. "What's wrong with you?"
"I'm dead," said Hailstone faintly.
"You're wrong," the prince assured him. "You have not yet left the world."
"I'm 9/10 dead," asserted Hailstone obstinately, heaving a groan. "Oh!"
The compassionate Camel Man knelt down beside him. "Test your limbs one by one," he advised him. "If you can move them all, it's not so bad."
"It can't be helped," whined the innkeeper.
All the same, he tried to sit up. Then he stretched his feet and stood up.
"I'm alive," he said, relieved. "But it was frightful."
"What was frightful?" asked the prince.
"The 9-tailed fox was here," reported Hailstone. "He attacked me as I stood between the shafts, counting the stars. He threw a great big stone at my head, and I lost consciousness and fell down like a sack. Then the fox stamped on my face, and I've been dead to the world until now. Thanks 10,000 times for saving my life."
"Stone," cried Batur, lifting up the cushion which was lying in the snow. Everyone laughed, but Batur soon regretted his thoughtless words, for the prince ordered silence and demanded sternly, "Who has been in the carriage of his holiness?" Batur was terrified. He could figure out well who had been in there, and the people from the kitchen said, "We must look and see where the fellow is hiding." "He must be found at once," the lama ordered sternly. "No," cried Batur, treading on the camel man's foot as if by accident. "You needn't look for him, because it was me." "You?" asked the camel man, astounded. But Batur trod on his foot again, and he fell silent. "You?" asked the prince, looking at Batur, and then at Hailstone. When he had looked well at them, he burst out laughing. "So, you're the nine-tailed fox that stamps on people's faces."
"I trod on him by accident," said Batur dejectedly, "and I beg for leniency because it was so dark."
"No pardon is possible," cried the lama. "It is improper for anyone to enter the carriage of his holiness. The criminal who did it must be flogged."
Batur was frightened. He looked up at the prince, but the prince was no longer laughing, and indeed it looked as if a ruthless trial would be held. Then Big Tiger, who had been hiding behind a pillar, ran forward, followed by Christian, who had been hiding behind another pillar, and both kowtowed before the prince and cried with one voice, "We beg for justice."
"Who are you?" asked the prince.
"He's Compass Mountain, and I'm Big Tiger, and we crept into the carriage because it was so cold," said Christian. "And because we wanted to kowtow to the living Buddha," said Big Tiger.
"But you need not have hidden for that reason," the prince remarked.
"Certain people," Big Tiger explained, "need not know that we are awake and running around, for we should be asleep."
"This seems a difficult matter," said the prince.
"Stand up."
"We do not dare," Big Tiger objected.
"Stand up all the same," the prince commanded. "You are polite, and that makes amends for a great deal."
"But not for this," cried the lama, indignantly flinging his red robe across his shoulder.
"Nothing has been decided yet," declared the prince. "We do not know who has been in the carriage, whether one, or two, or three, or anyone at all, but we are going to solve the mystery. The rest of you go to your work. Come, you three."
"We hear and obey," said Big Tiger and Christian.
"Volna," murmured Batur to himself. "There's certainly going to be trouble."
"Were you saying something?" the prince asked, and as he spoke Mongolian, Batur knew that he was being addressed.
"I said I'm thankful to your highness."
"We think you're a young rascal," said the prince. He opened the door of the guest room and went in, followed by Big Tiger, Christian, and Batur. It was warm in the room, a tallow candle was burning faintly, and when the prince stepped aside, Christian and Big Tiger saw a Kong. Batur's eyes were cast down, and so he saw only a bit of faintly lit floor. The Kong was covered with beautiful rugs, and on the rugs, upright and motionless, sat a very old man in the red robe of a lama. His bald head was bent slightly forward, and the beads of a prayer chaplet were gliding through his fingers.
"He's like the Nephrite Emperor in Peking," whispered Big Tiger. "Only not so fat," said Christian under his breath.
Batur, who up till now had remained in the background, pressed forward and threw himself on his knees before the venerable man. Then Christian and Big Tiger also knelt down reverently. Yolros Lama interrupted his silent prayer. The beads ceased to glide between his fingers. There was complete silence. "Here are three boys," said the prince, "who come to beg your blessing on a long journey before them." He spoke Chinese in order to indicate to the living Buddha that Christian and Big Tiger did not know Mongolian. Yolros Lama stood up. He was tall, thin, and very solemn, and his eyes were black. When he had laid his hand in benediction on the tousled heads of the three boys, he said, "Stand up, my children." It sounded like a command, and Christian and Big Tiger obeyed at once, murmuring only a hasty, "We do not dare." "And you," said the abbot in Mongolian to Batur, "do you not hear my words?"
"I hear them," said Batur, without looking up. "Then do as I bid you. We are alone, and you need not fear my warden."
"It is contrary to all custom," Batur excused himself, standing up.
but he kept his head bowed, his eyes shut, and his hands crossed reverently on his breast.
"Bolna," said Yolros Lama, smiling. "I do not rebuke your obstinacy."
Then he reflected for a moment and said, "We shall speak Chinese so that we all understand each other. Do you also understand this language?"
"Speak Central Chinese very, very good," said Bator.
The Prince of the Belens suppressed a laugh, and Yolros Lama sat down again on the Kong.
"We have three young culprits here," said the prince, "but we do not know which of them really did the deed."
"It is those two," said the abbot.
Big Tiger and Christian were startled, for they had often heard that eminent and venerable lamas know more than other mortals.
The abbot smiled. "The matter is simple," he said. "I heard you two boys come running along.
You tripped over the carriage shafts in front of my door, and one of you said, 'This is the abbot's carriage.'"
"That was me," said Christian.
"Let's climb in," the other whispered. "There's nothing else to do."
"That was me," Big Tiger admitted.
"I know even more," said Yolros Lama. "The prince asked your names, and so I learned them. My warden has told me what he heard from the innkeeper, and so I know quite a lot about your journey with the soldier Good Fortune, without having to ask you anything. But there's one thing which I do not know, and perhaps you will tell me."
"We'll tell you everything," declared Big Tiger.
"With the exception of one thing," Christian let slip.
"Probably that's just the one thing I want to know," said the Yolros Lama amiably. "Where are you going in General Wu's horseless car?"
"Ah," Christian breathed a sigh of relief, and Big Tiger said, "We are traveling through the desert to Urumqi."
"That is a long way, my children," said Yolros Lama, "and you must be careful, for you have with you a man of evil reputation."
"That green coat, very bad man," Bator confirmed.
"Be silent," cried the Prince of the Belens, "and speak when you're spoken to."
Bator lapsed into penitent silence and bowed his head still lower, but the abbot said,
"Let him be, Prince. I see he has something on his heart. He will tell it to me presently. I wish to question each of them in turn. Big Tiger has replied, and now I ask his friend, Compass Mountain. Come here to me, my child, and whisper to me, if you do not wish to say it out loud, why General Wu is sending you with the soldier Good Fortune to Urumqi."
Once more Christian was frightened, and he searched his mind in consternation for an answer. He would have found it quite impossible to lie to the abbot, and the abbot, he knew, would have spotted any untruthfulness. Christian would have preferred to remain silent with bowed head like Bator.
"General Wu Pei Fu is sending us home by a roundabout way," he stammered at last. "We are from Peking, but there's a big battle going on there, and as it's dangerous for boys, we have to go by Urumqi."
The living Buddha smiled benignly. "You have spoken the truth, Compass Mountain, but not the whole truth. You are hiding something from me."
"General Wu," said Christian, "does not permit me to speak about that."
"Then it can't be helped," said the abbot. "Keep your secret, but keep it better than you have kept it from me. If someone asks you again why General Wu is sending you to Urumqi, do not become confused. Answer without hesitation, so that you will be believed. Your secret is known to me, and apparently I know more about it than you do, for General Wu is my friend, and his thoughts are not hidden from me. Therefore I will lend you and Big Tiger my poor help. I have a ring which I have worn for 20 years, although it does not belong to me. I now perceive that the time has come. The ring seeks its owner. Take it from me, and give it to him who desires it with a great desire. He will help you if you are in need." Saying this, Yolros Lama slipped a silver ring from his finger and handed it to Christian, who bowed deeply.
"It will go on your right thumb," said the abbot.
Christian tried and found it was so.
"But how is the ring to find its owner?" asked Christian, perplexed, "when I don't know what the owner looks like. In the end, someone will say, 'Give it to me,' and it will be the wrong person."
"Sit down beside me," said Yolros Lama. "I must speak to you under my breath, for walls have ears." Christian and Big Tiger climbed up on the Kong. Christian sat on the left, and Big Tiger on the right of the abbot.
"There is still a place left," said Yolros Lama to Bator. "Sit opposite me, my son, and tell me who you are."
"My humble name Bator, son of Dogalon, and son's son of nowhere at all, that all like breath of wind which blows away, not worthy speak." While Bator was saying this, Yolros Lama seemed to glance at him with surprise for a moment, but when he spoke, it was as calmly as before. "Look at me, son of the son of nowhere at all. Here is the place where you must sit." "Great awe say no, heart say yes," replied Bator, raising his eyes timidly. Then he sat down in the place indicated. "Prince," said Yolros Lama, "I thank you for having brought these three culprits to me. Hearken you also, and learn how events, separated by long years, become linked together in this hour." The prince of the Belin Mongols bowed slightly and said in a low voice, "We listen with reverence to your words." 20 years ago, said Yolros Lama, I was traveling to Urga for the festival of the Seven States. Joyful people in silk robes and mounted on their best horses were riding thence by every road. On the fourth day I rested with my suite by the well of the Yellow Ravine. There I met a young man who was sorrowful, and his eyes were full of gloom, for he had sworn a terrible oath to kill many men as retribution for what had befallen him. He came into my tent, and I said to him, "You darken the light. No noble man lives thus." But the man was silent. I said, "Haughty dragon, will have to repent." Then the man threw himself on the ground, drew a ring from his finger, and said, "Pray take this ring of anger, by which, with 20 others, I have vowed a vow of vengeance, but ask nothing more of me." I looked at the ring, and it was a silver snake, which wound itself around the finger in a double coil. "The snake," I said, "is not only the emblem of anger. The snake is also a despised creature, because it creeps along the ground. Hence it is also an emblem of humility. I will wear your ring to remind me to be humble." At this the man wept, and I knew he would have liked to have the ring back for the sake of its new significance. He became gentle as the wind, and in that moment his life lay before me like an open book. "I will give you back the ring," I said, "when my days are numbered. In the hour when you hold the humble snake in your hands again, think of me as of one who has departed from the world." Yolros Lama was silent, and so were they all. Christian looked furtively at the ring, which was a snake, and it did not please him nearly as well as before. The prince put his hands up to his face and wept, and lamented in Mongolian, and Bator told later that he had said, "With you the light shall disappear from the earth. How shall we go on living?" Yolros Lama made no reply to the prince's lament. He simply said, "This is the story of the ring, but it is not yet finished. The man thanked me and wished to ride on. But I said to him, 'Wait for 1 hour. You have given me a ring. I do not wish to let you depart without a return gift, but as I possess nothing, you must wait until someone comes the way and gives me a gift.' We sat down and drank tea, and after an hour along came a merry fellow riding a camel. He sang as he rode, and when he saw my tent and learned who I was, he dismounted and begged me for the traveler's blessing. I gave it willingly, and I asked the merry fellow his name. 'I am nowhere at all,' said he, 'and I thank you for your powerful blessing, in which I shall always rejoice.' 'Nowhere at all,' I asked, 'have you brought me something?' 'Forgive my great forgetfulness,' cried Nowhere at all, taking a little book from his belt. In the book were 3 dried sandalwood leaves. He gave them to me, saying he had plucked them from the sacred tree of Kumbum, and though it was only permitted to take 1, he had got 3, and did not know how it had happened. I took the leaves, and handing 1 to the man who was sad, I said, 'Take this leaf to remind you that there are people who are joyous and without guile.' The 2nd leaf I returned to Nowhere at all, saying, 'You, my droll fellow, require no such advice. Keep the leaf until you come one day to the valley of dark rushing water, then throw it to the winds.' He did not understand what I meant, and I was glad of that. I kept the 3rd leaf for myself.
This morning it fell from my hand, and when I tried to pick it up, I trod on it by accident. And then suddenly all that had happened long years ago at the well of the Yellow Ravine stood before my eyes, and that is why I tell it to you now. Another will complete the tale.
But if some wrong person wants to have the ring, asked Christian again, what shall I do?
Yolros Lama smiled.
You have a sufficient burden to bear with one mission, he said. It was unwise of me to load you with another.
Christian got red and embarrassed, and the living Buddha ordered,
Give the ring to your friend, Big Tiger. He has a much too splendid name and will benefit by the humbling influence of the snake.
Christian then passed the ring to Big Tiger, who bowed and said, Thanks 10,000 times for your esteemed confidence.
He to whom the ring belongs, said the abbot, will get a great shock when he sees it on your finger. Thus you shall recognize the rightful owner.
Yolros Lama was silent. Then he looked at Batur. What have you got to ask me, Batur? He said.
From my father Dogalong, message great reverence, great request. We intend journey, camels wait, Dogalong wait too, and ask, may he travel 2 days with honorable caravan of holy abbot Yolros Lama?
Dogalong may travel with us as long as he wishes, said the abbot. There is nothing to prevent him. Saying this, he dropped his eyelids.
Christian and Big Tiger realized that they were dismissed, and Batur too stood up. Before leaving the room, they kowtowed once more. But the eyes of Yolros Lama were closed, the beads were gliding once more between his fingers, and the prince signed them that they should go very quietly. One after another, they went out into the courtyard, over which the cold morning star was twinkling.